Welcome to Journal Club for February 12th, 2025. I'm Malcolm Dix. Facial recognition is so ubiquitous that we rarely stop to think about how it actually works. If I hold my phone up to my face to unlock it, what is the phone actually doing? Is this a deterministic algorithm? Is it a machine learning model? How does it work? And in the rare case that it struggles to recognize me, why is that? In today's paper, the authors introduce a new form of facial recognition that overcomes some of the problems of the previous versions. The challenge for us is to understand the context of their contribution. We're not going to be able to grok what these authors are doing unless we first take a look at what came before. So we're going to start by going back, all the way back to when facial recognition started. We'll explore what it was like in its fledgling phases, then we're going to walk forward through generation after generation of the technology to see how it has grown and changed. That will bring us back to today and to this paper. We'll look at what these authors are adding to this field and compare and contrast it to what came before. Let's dive in. In its earliest form, in the 1960s, facial recognition was a far simpler and more manual technology than you might imagine. The first systems relied on what's called geometric-based recognition. A photo is taken of a face, and then the film is developed. Someone then looks at the photo and manually measures the distances between key facial landmarks like eyes, the nose, and the mouth. These measurements and the ratios between them are then used as a unique identifier. The problem with this approach was the human labor involved. There was so much subjectivity in the measurements that they couldn't be reproduced consistently. By the late 1960s and early 70s, computational approaches had started to emerge. Statistical analyses and small pieces of automation were beginning to replace the manual efforts of the previous decades, little by little. This set the stage for a breakthrough from Takeo Kanade, a Japanese computer scientist who is a pioneer in computer vision and is now a professor at Carnegie Mellon. He proposed one of the first mostly automated facial recognition systems. These systems were capable of extracting facial features from grayscale images and using statistical pattern recognition to classify faces. This was a promising start and a huge leap forward, but it still struggled with variations in lighting, facial expression, and head position. It was also extremely power-hungry in terms of computational resources, and could only be run on giant mainframes, so its real-world utility was fairly limited. But as computational power increased, all that started to change. New statistical methods emerged that allowed for more systematic facial analysis. One of the next breakthroughs was the eigenfaces method in the late 80s and early 90s. This approach used principal component analysis, PCA, to reduce the dimensionality of facial image data. This allowed them to capture only the characteristics with the most variance. Rather than analyzing an entire face pixel by pixel, eigenfaces transformed images into weighted sums of key features. This allowed the faces to be compared mathematically. Compared to previous tech, this method generalized fairly well across different images, but it still suffered from sensitivity to lighting conditions. It also required faces to be well aligned or everything would be thrown off. Soon after that, we saw a new variant called Fisher faces, which was an extension of eigenfaces that used linear discriminant analysis, LDA. It improved classification by optimizing the separation between different entities rather than just preserving variance. But still, it struggled with real-world images, photos that were not taken in a lab under perfect lighting. The next big leap came with texture-based feature extraction techniques. This included local binary patterns, LBP, and the histogram of oriented gradients, HOG, or HOG. LBP worked by converting an image into a set of binary patterns based on pixel intensity comparisons. This provided a robust descriptor of local texture that could be used to distinguish between different facial regions and improve recognition accuracy even under varying lighting conditions. HOG, on the other end, analyzed the directional changes in pixel intensity gradients, capturing the edge and shape information that is crucial for object detection of any kind, but particularly for facial recognition. These methods were significantly more robust than the purely statistical approaches of the previous decades. They could not only better withstand lighting variations, but partial occlusion as well. And this is very important, because some of the facial landmarks that other techniques used are actually frequently occluded like hair or hats or headphones or glasses or scarves or masks, etc. For facial recognition to be practically useful, it needed to accommodate some measure of partial occlusion. These new techniques could do that. The previous ones could not. That being said, LBP and HOG still required handcrafted feature selection. This meant that engineers had to manually determine which features were relevant rather than letting a model learn them dynamically. This limitation is what paved the way for the machine learning methods that would come next. There were several mini generations of ML used for facial recognition, but it was deep learning that fundamentally changed the field. It allowed practitioners to shift from hand-engineered features to automatically learned hierarchical representations. Convolutional neural networks, CNNs or DCNNs, became the dominant architecture for facial recognition because of their ability to extract multi-level patterns from images. As a reminder, a CNN consists of multiple layers of filters that detect increasingly abstract features, so starting from simple edges and textures all the way up to high-level facial structures. And critically, unlike previous approaches, CNNs did not require explicit feature engineering. Instead, they learned to optimize their own features based on the training data. This led to massive improvements in accuracy, and this is when we saw the explosion of off-the-shelf models in this space, so DeepFace, FaceNet, VGGFace, and others, that could perform one-shot learning. In other words, they could recognize a new identity, a new face, from just a single image. Despite their massive success, CNNs introduced some challenges, particularly in terms of computational efficiency. Many deep learning models required significant processing power overall and often extracted redundant or unnecessary features, leading to more inefficiencies. The authors of today's paper address those specific challenges by introducing a novel optimization approach known as Galactic Swarm Optimization, GSO, which is used in conjunction with CNNs. When you combine them, they form what the authors call the GSO-CNN model. GSO on its own is a meta-heuristic optimization algorithm that is inspired by the movement of stars within galaxies. Potential solutions such as selected facial features are treated as stars, which move and cluster together in space because of gravity. Each individual feature, each star, undergoes two phases of optimization. One, they were refined within their own galaxies. This means that subsets of features compete to determine the most useful feature in the bunch. And two, the solutions migrate between galaxies, allowing the best performing features to be shared across the entire dataset. This dual layer optimization enables the CNN to focus on the most relevant facial patterns while discarding redundant or less useful information. As I mentioned, traditional CNN-based models often include large sets of features that do not necessarily contribute to improved accuracy. When they integrate GSO, the behavior of the model changes. It starts selecting only the most distinctive and informative features in the bunch. This improves efficiency without sacrificing accuracy. And those weren't just claims, they were backed up by the data. The authors didn't just propose this idea, they built a proof of concept, put it through its paces, and compared its performance to some of the other solutions we talked about earlier. The results were clear. GSO-CNN outperformed traditional CNN models in both accuracy and computational efficiency, particularly in challenging real-world conditions. It demonstrated better resilience to variations in lighting, pose, and partial occlusion, where previous methods often struggled. Not only that, but it also required fewer computational resources. So I would say that this makes it a more practical choice for any resource-constrained deployment. If you're building an IoT system or a camera trap or working in any other environment where processing power is limited, then it might be worth taking a look at this model. If you'd like to dive deeper on their algorithms, their training data, or their results, then I'd highly recommend that you download the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.